Hi, I'm Patrick Palm, and this is the Learn From Leaders podcast. In this show, I interview favorite customers and other interesting leaders in product development, marketing, HR, executive management, investors. You find favorite leaders in many different places and in organizations doing game development and publishing, software as a service and other tech companies and big enterprises, you know, going from very centralized, command and control kind of organizations to a more modern way of working with a culture, with high team autonomy, and better alignment towards the company goals and values. So let's go.
Ben, I was at GDC this year, and I think I can say that one of the best sessions, not only in my opinion, was the one that you did on accountability. And I also noticed in some roundtables, people were eager to discuss accountability. It's a hard leadership question. And I think, you know, if you get it right, both as a leader, you know, culturally, it makes a massive difference for, you know, collaboration, for quality, for, I think, happiness, you know, how happy people are at work, both everyone in the team and leaders and, you know, everyone. So it was quite a few questions that, you know, came to mind, you know, when I listened to you there at GDC, and I think your talk is also, on the GDC Vault.
Yes.
So it's possible to go back and check it out. But maybe, like, you know, as part of this conversation, maybe you can just, is it possible for you to do a summary of your, you know, this model that you presented there?
Yeah. Let me see if I want to give any background on it. So I see accountability as something held between layers of an organization. So it could be an individual and their boss. It could be anywhere where there is a hierarchical difference, which is common. I think accountability, a version of accountability may be able to exist among peers and things like that. But the key reason I talk about it from the lens of hierarchy is that consequence is a part of accountability. And if you cannot enact any sort of consequence, then you can't actually hold anyone accountable. So I'll start with that as an overview. And I would also say that, actually, one more thing, accountability is an external thing. It's not an internal thing. I think responsibility is an internal thing. And we very much want responsibility to be taken by people, but accountability is something that comes from the outside. It's external. I see it as four steps.
Just a question on that. So when you say internal versus external, you mean internal as it's internal with the individual?
Yes.
And no external one, as...
I take responsibility for things. No one can make me take responsibility for things. But someone can hold me accountable for what I have or have not done if they have the ability to create consequence. You can't force responsibility. It must be accepted. And I think by its very nature, there's actually somebody, oh my goodness, I can't believe I can't remember his name. Give me one second, because Christopher Avery, I remembered it. Okay, Christopher Avery talks quite a bit about responsibility. He's worth checking out. He will help people understand what responsibility actually means in a world where terms like ownership and responsibility and accountability are all tossed around in the same salad. But accountability is an external thing. It is held by somebody, again, who usually has some way to create consequence for you. And I see there being four steps to creating the healthy accountability.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to jump in again.
Absolutely.
I already have all these follow-up questions. So I like how you separate responsibility and accountability. And I think it was clear what you said there on the difference. Now, if you, for example, as part of a role description, are putting in a responsibility. So, you know, you're saying that, you know, one of your responsibilities, you know, is this. In a way, when, you know, if I'm putting that into a role description for one of my employees, it's kind of me holding them accountable, right?
You will hold them accountable for that, hopefully, right? You and we'll talk about this when we get into the model, but you're going to set an expectation with that role description, and it says, hey, I want you to be responsible for these things. You can't make them responsible for those things. Mm-hmm. You can't make them take responsibility, but you can hold them accountable.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a commit thing. So, you know, I'm calling out that, you know, you are responsible, but responsibility isn't really there until it's something that, you know, it's committed to.
Exactly, it's accepted, yes. And you actually want to do that inside of the accountability model. You want to do all you can to encourage people to be responsible. Because if I had a choice between, I had an organization that had phenomenal accountability set up, or I had a choice where everybody took responsibility, I would choose option two every time. But we don't control whether people do or do not take responsibility and what they do or do not take responsibility for. We can encourage, we can incentivize, we can do a lot of things. We do control accountability because, again, it's externally generated.
Mm.
So, you know, if there was a way for me to just like make people take responsibility, then like that would be the best, because responsibility, when you reach an internally responsible state around something, it's quite powerful. Again, I recommend people check out Christopher Avery's work on this subject.
I can't help but think it. You know, a cousin to this is a model I learned a long time ago about the difference between a leader and a manager, because that's also something where, you know, leadership as a term is tossed around quite a bit, and it can sometimes be confusing. And I did actually learn this model in the armed forces, you know, when I was studying to become an officer. So, you know, maybe you had the same model in the U.S. forces. But the model I learned there was that the difference would be that the management responsibility, that's an authority I'm given. So it's basically an authority I'm given to hold people accountable, versus the leadership is earned. If I have earned my leadership, if I earn leadership from the team, that might be in the form of being that I'm able to influence them taking responsibility. If I'm matching these two models, that's kind of what I you know, conclude. Does that resonate with you, or
did I just break everything? I view management and leadership differently, but I like that model. I think it's a functional, like if that's a frame someone has, I wouldn't be like offended by it. It's like, yeah, that could be really helpful to think about. And I do think I like how it places leadership in a place of, hey, leaders definitionally have followers, and you can have people that have to follow you. And in that environment, you get coercive or compliance-based following, or you can have people that are excited to follow you, and then you actually get a lot better outcomes, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think like calling out that difference, you know, in that maybe in the model you were saying, like the first one is more the management of, I use my authority to make people do what I want. For me, I just call it authority. It's like, oh, you have been given authority. You have a position of power or defined influence, and people have to listen to you. You know, you had this, I'm sure you had similar experience to this when you actually, as an officer or in the military at all, when you encounter someone of higher rank, there's not a question. You obey. It's just you have to. Now, there are obviously exceptions to this where they can give an unlawful order. It's not that you could get to abandon judgment. That can be a serious problem if you do. But your default is, I obey what this person says. I defer to them I show respect to them through salutes and other things. Like, it's all just automatic. And that's positional authority and formal respect sort of being made visible when those things happen. But it's, you're right, it's not the same. There were the leaders that you would show formal respect to and acknowledge their positional authority, but perhaps you were not necessarily thrilled to be following them. You did it because you had to, not because you wanted to or were excited to. And the leaders, I think, get people excited to go where they're trying to go.
Yeah. And I mean, and you know, just to wrap up, you know, that analogy, you know, in this way of viewing it, you know, in not a military situation, but that authority that comes with your, you know, with your, you know, manager authority, that would be things like, you know, salary, a lot of things that you will probably address, you know, when we get into how we talk about kind of, you know, consequences and so forth. So, let's move into this, accountability model.
Okay. So, first, I want to say that I'm going to walk through four steps that I call them the four steps to healthy accountability. You don't actually need all these steps to create accountability. In fact, you only need one of them. If you hold someone accountable, basically you see what they do and then you create consequence based on what they've done, you have some basic form of accountability. And it is toxic, but it is there because you haven't done all the steps. They might be surprised or they might be confused. But you have seen what's happened, you have made judgments based on it, and then you have created consequence. That is your bare minimum for creating some level of accountability. Again, without good communication, without going through the other steps, this creates usually a lot of fear in people. So let's walk through what it looks like to create healthy accountability by actually going through the four steps. I'll just do a quick summary of this. Overview of the four steps. First, you have set expectations. Second, you have negotiate. Third, you have commit. You actually alluded to that earlier. That's a place where you're inviting the other person to really take responsibility and not just be held accountable. And then fourth, you have the hold step. And again, hold step is the only essential one, but it is insufficient for healthy environments on its own. So let's go a little bit more into detail on each. First, you're setting expectations. This one is very often missed. And if you can do none of the others except hold, I would say do set expectations. And setting expectations is at least from the person who is holding accountability to the person being held accountable, saying, this is what I am expecting of you in the role, on the project, whatever it might be. This is what I am expecting of you. That's your bare minimum set expectations. More advanced version of set expectations, you bring your expectations and they bring theirs. What did they think their expectations were for the role? What expectations might they have for you? Although they won't be able to hold you accountable necessarily, do they want support from you as they go about navigating their role? All these things can be brought to the table in set expectations. And the reason this one is so important is because so often I see people complaining about accountability in environments where expectations have never been set. What are you holding them accountable to? You're holding them accountable to something in your mind, but it's not in theirs. It's not known. It's not shared. You didn't align on what was important about their role. And so that they went and did something that doesn't line up with what you wanted, you ask them to mind read, and then you punish them when they couldn't, and nobody can. And some people get lucky and some people don't in those environments. So first rule, first step, set expectations. Second, you negotiate. So again, whether you both brought them or only one person brought them, now we have a conversation. Here are the expectations I have laid out. Let's talk about what's reasonable about that and in what time frame and what I missed. And let's try to come to a place where we're both engaging in this. And this, speaking about wanting people to take responsibility, you're actually empowering the person you're attempting to hold accountable, or you will be holding accountable, I should say. You're inviting them to have agency over what they're held accountable for. Maybe you ask them to do too many things and they reflect that and they say, I'm looking at your list of expectations. I do not believe I will be able to get all that done. You can still hold me accountable for it. It's hard for me to feel like I'm bought into this. Okay, what would need to change? Or they might say something like, hey, you gave me a set of expectations. They missed this set of things I do. I have a question. Do you consider those things unimportant? Should I stop doing them? Or are they also part of what I should be focusing on? You can have that conversation too. So negotiation, if I know I'm going to be holding someone accountable and I've done setting expectations, negotiation is the next most important step. Negotiate these expectations. Try to reach a place where you can both align on, okay, we now have a shared set of what I will be holding you accountable for. And in a formal, you know, boss direct report or manager direct report setting, you can do this over some amount of time. This might take half an hour. It might take a few hours. It might take 10 minutes. And there are other things where you might do this really rapidly. Just a real quick, like, hey, this is the expectation I have. Does that make sense to you? What am I missing? Oh yeah, I think this. Okay, cool. That's great. Like, so I think some people can get overwhelmed by, oh, that's going to take forever. Well, if it does, it probably means you have a complicated situation you need to figure out, and negotiation is even more important. But sometimes you can just do this really rapidly. The key thing is you're setting expectations and then you're letting the person being held accountable engage with that and take some amount of agency over their own work life. So that's negotiate. The third is commit. This is the person who is going to be held accountable, putting their hand in the middle and saying, I agree to do this. You know, they're shaking your hand. They're putting their hand in the Bible, whatever it is. Like, I agree that to the best of my ability, I'm going to attempt to do these things we've agreed to. This step is the least essential. As I've said, you can hold someone accountable without doing this step. And there are times where I can reasonably see someone being a good manager and actually not reaching commitment because the other person is just simply unaligned about what the nature of their role is. And if they're not willing to become aligned, they may not be able to commit. Okay, we're now in, you know, you want to try to bridge that gap, but you may have things that you need them to attempt to do. And they may say, like, I can't commit to that. And you're like, well, I'm going to hold you accountable to it, whether you commit to it or not. These situations can happen. Ideally, they are infrequent, and hopefully you can work through them through negotiation. But you're trying to get to this place where the person commits. There's also a reverse that happens as well, that I think is skipped when we do a commit step, which again is fairly rare, but when it does happen, which is that the person being held accountable also in that negotiation, and I kind of alluded to this around set expectations, may be asking for support from the manager. Maybe be saying, well, okay, cool, you've asked me to do all these things. On my own, I can't do all of them, but if you help me here, here, and here, then I believe I'm going to basically try to do these things. I'm going to commit to doing them. Let's do it. And so you're also, as the manager, saying, I'm going to support you as you go forward and attempt to meet these expectations. And, you know, based on, and obviously, you know, you don't want to be overly legalistic about this. 2 weeks later, they might ask you for something. It's like, well, you didn't say that when we were setting expectations and negotiating. So I can't provide you that support. You're like, be reasonable about this. Simultaneously, if they are bringing forward, like, these are a couple areas I'm going to need help with. There's a key stakeholder I don't have a strong relationship with, and you do. I'm going to need your help bringing them on board for where this project is going or whatever it might be. So you create that. You now both, to some extent, commit the manager to supporting, and that's the person that I would say is holding accountability, and then the person being held accountable to executing those expectations as best they can. So you've set expectations, you've negotiated those expectations, and now we've committed. And then we get to hold. And hold, again, this is the only one that's required, but if you've done it after you've done the first three, it now makes a lot more sense to everybody. You've spent time building trust. You spent time investing in understanding where both parties are at. And now we get to do this thing of, like, okay, cool. Maybe you had a window of 3 months or 6 months or something. 6 months later, you can say, cool, this is what we had expectations around. How did it go? Now to get a little bit more advanced in the hold step, I don't actually consider it we set goals for 6 months or for the completion of the project or whatever, and I'll check in with you when that happens. I believe that the hold step is actually a continuous ongoing step where you're both informing each other about what's changing, because we live in this game development, software development world where, you know, I don't know, maybe somebody on a, on your team that was really important to the completion of the project quit. They went to a different job. They got a dream job. They left, right? The company deprioritized or changed funding around something, and that shifted the amount of resources you had available. All of these things may adjust expectations. And again, you can still hold to the original set of expectations, but it's better if you view the hold step as a continual ongoing thing where we're both talking about what's happening and what's not. And if you do this well as a manager, you are not going to surprise your direct report when you hold them accountable. The other thing I think that I want to call out, especially about this hold step, I mentioned earlier that consequence is an important thing. If you cannot create consequence, I don't think you can hold someone accountable. You can ask them to do things, you can try to influence them in some way, but if you can't create consequence, you can't actually hold someone accountable. You're relying on them taking responsibility for whatever it is. You're relying on their good graces. So what is consequence? There's two types. And a lot, like when people hear consequence and they hear accountability, most of the time they think only negative. They think there's negative consequence. Accountability means that someone's going to get punished. Because when people talk about accountability, it's usually after something's gone wrong. And you hear phrases like, okay, well, who's accountable for this? Or like, I wish there was more accountability around here. And all those things imply something's gone wrong and I want someone to blame. And so we view the lens of accountability through this very negative consequence perspective by default. And when I'm talking about consequence and holding accountability, it's actually that there is both positive and negative consequence. And then everybody goes, well, what's consequence? And everybody defaults to things like, did you get a raise or not? Did you get a promotion or not? You know, they're very, very blunt force things that are actually in large bureaucracies really, really hard sometimes to pull off. But there's a lot of other consequences that can happen. And so I split consequence actually into positive, negative, and adaptive. And positive consequence might be something like a raise. It also might be, hey, I wanted to be involved in this project that's not directly related to me, but I'm very interested in, and I feel like I could add a lot of value to. Well, you've done a great job. You've proven that you can handle the role you're in. Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring you into that. Let's help you do that. Didn't want you to be distracted by that while you were sort of settling in. But now that you're there, you've proved you can do the job. Absolutely. Let's bring you into that. There's a reward in there. And I when I gave the talk at GDC, I listed like, here's a set of things that are not just about handing someone either title or money or something like that, that it might be rewards. Consequences could be, you know, yes, you could take away, you could lower someone's pay, you could demote somebody, you could not promote someone or not give someone a raise. But there's other things that you could do. You can limit their responsibilities. And sometimes it's appropriate to do so. If somebody had, you've set expectations for somebody and they have not met those expectations and those expectations were important to get done, it may be wise to limit some of their agency and constrain how they're operating. And that's for their benefit and for the organization's benefit if they're not able to do the job well. And obviously, like, you know, there's extreme things like, hey, you should fire somebody. Like, those situations do happen. And then adaptive was the one when I was like kind of creating all the model and going through the GDC talk. I was like, there's something else in here that I want to be important, that I want to people to know about accountability, which is your first step should tend to be towards learning and understanding why expectations were not met. Especially if they're not met, jumping to, okay, well, the way I'm holding accountability, I'm sorry, I have to punish you harshly now because we set expectations and negotiated and committed. And now it's time to hold, it's time to punish you. Well, wait a minute. What can we learn? Do we want to jump to a place as an organization where as soon as someone doesn't meet an expectation, they are punished? I don't think so. I think if you do that, what you'll have is a lot of people setting very low expectations or attempting to only commit to very low expectations because they don't want to be punished. Instead, can we go, look, you didn't hit all your expectations. A lot of that kind of makes sense. I want to know what you learned. I want to know how you're going to do better next time. I want to know how we're going to set expectations through the setting expectations, negotiating, and committing steps better next time. And these I call adaptive consequences, which are you don't need to jump to you get a promotion or you get fired. You can go like, cool, what did we learn? How are we going to do better next time? So those are the three types of consequences. That's how you hold accountability. Again, four model, four step model, set expectations, negotiate, commit, and hold.
When you're explaining this, to people, and I remember I noticed that after your talk at GDC, there was a pretty large crowd that gathered around you outside afterwards, asking you questions. And then I had a quick meeting with someone, and then I kind of came back the same way, and you were still standing there with a bunch of people answering questions. So I guess people have a lot of questions around this. What are the most common questions and things that people don't really get around this model?
I'm trying to remember back. A lot of the questions came from the perspective of somebody who actually wanted to be held accountable in a healthy way. And I mentioned that, hey, while I believe it is the person who has the positional authority, like with the person higher in the hierarchy, with more power inside of the system who can create consequence, who has higher responsibility because they are ultimately the one holding accountability, it's their job to set this up. If they don't, though, you can also do this as somebody, as an individual who wants to be held accountable in a healthy way. Maybe you've seen somebody or you've been in organizations where there wasn't healthy accountability and you saw people get blindsided, people who were working very hard, but still got punished because they were working very hard on the wrong things and they didn't realize. And you don't want that to be you. And so a lot of people had questions around, like, how do I go about setting this up if that's me? And it is just what you actually introduce the model to your manager. Most managers I know would be very happy if somebody came to them and said, hey, there's a way that that I want to be held accountable, and here's a simple model. Are you up for trying it? And if you ask and they say, like, no, I hate that, go away. Well, okay, you just learned a lot. That might be useful for you going forward in your career about your boss or whoever it is. But oftentimes they'll actually be like, oh, cool, you're going to bring me expectations you think I should have for you, and you're going to commit to those and negotiate with me around. Okay, cool, I'm into this. You just took a lot of work off my plate. I think a lot of the other ones were just like, how do I set this up? Like, where do I start? And it's funny because it is right there. And like, well, you start with step one, you start with the setting of expectations. I think a challenge comes in, and I encountered this in some of the places I've worked, where no one's really taught what it means to set expectations. You come into a role or a company, and maybe you're managing or being managed or whatever, and there's levels in that company. And let's say it's a very simple model, actually very much like the simple model, but let's say it's a simple model where, you're an engineer and you're either an associate or a mid-level or a senior engineer, and then you can either become like a principal engineer or an architect, or maybe you go into engineering management or a director of engineering or something like that. And so there's this very simple set of titles. Often in those organizations, there is either no understanding of what it means to be associate, mid, senior, or there is a set of different expectations. And depending on who your manager is, you will have an easier or harder time being promoted. Because we are not aligned as an organization about what it means to have to promote someone to the level of engineer, from junior or from associate engineer. And I believe it is the role of the manager to actually stop and go, what is it that I think defines these levels? And then to go talk to other people that are their peers or superiors and say, this is what I think defines these levels. Where am I right and wrong? Talk to me about what I missed, what you agree with, what you don't agree with. And try to, as best you can, avoid simple checklists, because if you give someone a checklist to get promoted, they're going to knock it out pretty fast, as fast as they can. I think people try to control for that by saying, like, well, you have to spend X amount of time in a position. And that's really dumb, because sometimes somebody might already be operating at the next level. You didn't realize it, but now they have to spend 2 years there before they can be promoted because that was the rule that somebody put down. And it was a way to try to avoid people too rapidly progressing through their checkboxes or something. But actually going and saying like, okay, cool, this is what I expect of an associate. And now once you know what you expect of an associate and a mid-level and a senior, maybe no one else wants to talk to you about that. If so, hold it in to yourself internally, manage your people that way. If you can share it with others and learn from them and figure out like a shared, okay, we all sort of have the same picture of what an associate and a mid and a senior might be in engineering. And if you do that and you do that well, now you can actually say, well, okay, cool. I have this expectation for somebody locally in this role. One, does it align to their level? And if it does, great. What are the more specific things I would like them to do in the next quarter or half a year or whatever the time frame might be? And the time frames vary depending on project and context. They could be as tight as like 2 weeks and out to, a 6 months or a year seem pretty long with how much things change. But, you know, I wouldn't be offended if someone said like, yeah, we try to do a big set expectations thing every 6 months to make sure we're staying on track. I'm like, yeah, that could work. I'd probably prefer quarterly, but that could work. I think if you go out to a year, it's like, man, a lot happens in a year. People grow a lot in a year. So anyway, so I think that, but yeah, to come back to your thing, I think it's like, how do I even start this? And it's what you said, expectations. Well, how do I do that? Well, you have to think about what you expect. And you actually have to stop and spend cycles doing that. And then you have to do something that I think leaders are not often trained or incentivized to do, which is think about their role as leader and people manager and go like, okay, if I was taking this really seriously, what would I want to know? And some stuff like, well, I want to know what it would mean if my people were doing well or not. I'd like to be able to set a good expectations for them. Because if I'm doing those things, actually they're going to end up trusting me more because I won't be haphazardly applying accountability into their life or worse, not applying accountability at all. And everybody's just, you know, Wild West, doing whatever they want. So you have to spend the time.
So it sounds from what you're explaining now that, you know, this model and accountability in general can be applied both to, you know, for example, responsibilities that comes with a role. And then you're checking in on that, you know, with a certain cadence. You know, you talked about quarterly, for example, now.
Yeah.
But I guess it also would apply to goals.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, we talk about, you know, how to set goals. Obviously, you know, from a favorite point of view, we often get questions, you know, what's a theme? What's an epic? You know, what's a story? What's a feature? What's an asset? You know, how does that sit in a backlog? You know, how should we structure this? You know, the more, you know, practical perspective of it. But, you know, in the end of the day, you know, when I get into a conversation around, you know, if you're going to set up a template for an epic that you're going to have in your backlog, or if you have a list of objectives in your backlog and you create a template for, you know, what needs to be documented for that, you know, you're getting into the conversation, well, what would be, you know, verification steps, et cetera, yep. Et cetera. You get into, okay, you know, why is this important? You know, what is it? You know, and you have a conversation that you should probably not call out, you know, how it's going to be done because that's up to your team, et cetera. You know, the usual conversation around this. But a lot of that stuff, I think, is tying into this conversation. Yes. You know, if you do a good job on that, that will help you with a big part of, you know, setting expectations, if I'm following your model right here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is where a role tends to come in, like with a job description that has a set of responsibilities or whatever, however you decide to list it out. These are the things you do. These are the things we're expecting. And great, that's your baseline. That might be your baseline for setting expectations. Then there's also the local context, and that's everything you were just talking about. Hey, you're on this team. I might not be able to list out these are the specific, I might not, I would actually prefer you not list out these are the very specific pieces of work that I would like you to do as an engineer on this team. But the idea that like, this is what I'm expecting you to do in the context of this team, in the context of what they're working on, right? With their feature or asset or code or whatever they're doing, you know, backend system, anything. You're attempting to define what you want, how you want that other person to show up to work in order for you to evaluate them as being successful. And so there's the generic and there's the specific, and both should be captured in that setting of expectations. And yeah, absolutely. If there's like, hey, you know, you're the senior engineer or the tech lead on a team, maybe an expectation that might be set for you is this is a really important epic for us to get done. I'm not going to tell you exactly what part you should code or go into any of that specific detail. What I am going to do is say like, we need this epic and it needs to solve these three problems. And that's an expectation I have for you. I expect the team to finish that within the next 3 months or whatever, you know, again, it depends. It all depends on context. So that's an example of a specific thing, where a generic thing might be like, hey, I need to make sure that as part of this role, your job is to make sure that all the code that this team produces does not cause problems with any of the code the other teams are producing. So we're not making a mess.
Yeah, that's very clear. And I do want to get back to the team aspect here, but I have another question before. So it sounds to me when you explain this model that setting expectations and the negotiation steps, you know, they can be quite iterative, and the goal is basically to come to commitment. Is that a fair amount? You know, if there's a bit of a dance that, okay, you know, you do a stab at setting expectations, and then you have a team which will be very proactive in the process of clarifying and maybe also changing you know what this is, and then you know you want to come to that commitment. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One, you're going to do when you first start this, you're going to do a tight iterative loop around setting expectations and negotiating to attempt to reach commitment, and then there will be a longer form ongoing updating the goals, the expectations, continue to negotiate as the world changes around you. And adjusting the commitment. So again, we're not holding somebody to a ridiculous standard. And we're also not, this is an interesting one, we're not rewarding somebody for doing something that, like rewarding something somebody in a huge way for doing something that was actually fairly trivial. Because that's less common, but I've seen it where there was supposed to be something that was going to be very difficult, and it turned out to be quite easy because a solution was found, or the problem was in some sense redefined to be like, oh, wait, that's actually trivial. Well, okay, shoot. Well, that if we had that as like your major goal for the next 6 months, and we just discovered that we can get it done in 2 weeks and it'll work great. We don't go like, well, I guess we'll just wait 5.5 months and then reward you massively for your great success, right? We want to go like, oh, okay, well, hey, you know what? we missed, right? We learned something new. Let's iterate and adapt.
So let me ask you about some anti-patterns I've seen here. So one would be that you have, you know, you have a team that are very they're very afraid of committing to something they aren't confident, you know, that they will do. So they constantly optimize for a lower, you know, basically setting the bar low, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and obviously this is a bit of a sign of, I guess you can call it fear. I would probably argue that it's better to have a team which is a bit over-optimistic, because it's easier to make that into a learning process, and you kind of, you know, dial down the you know, kind of, you know, calibrate your expectations versus mm-hmm. the other way around. So that would be, you know, so I would love to hear, you know, you comment on that. But I do want to throw in the other one as well, which is when you, and I think you touched upon it a bit, you know, when you have a situation where, you know, as a leader, you see that something pretty grand is possible. And the team might not, they might feel that that is unrealistic, but you have a strong conviction that it's actually not. I think this team can make it, you know. And you know, just with what I said now, you kind of have a plot for you know, a movie about a sports team, you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, the team that, you know, they don't think they can win the league. You have the coach that comes in and say, you know what, I think we can win the league. And, you know, step by step, you know, the coach is bringing them towards that. You know, I've seen that movie several times.
Yeah.
You know, so and this happens in business, you know, we you know, it happens all the time. And some of the greatest businesses ever created, you know, have been led in that way.
Yes.
So how do you handle that? Because I imagine it can be quite hard to really get that commit when everyone's like, well, we can try, but, you know, I'm not going to put my job online for it. You know,
that's it. You just nailed it.
Yeah.
It's, I'm not going to put my job online for it. Okay. You're asking me, you're setting a goal that we know is optimistic. That is this is a stretch. This is a hard thing for us to do. And you want us to commit. And you know what? I'm okay committing to this. When we're talking about consequence in this environment, though, one, a lot of trust needs to be here. Two, we're talking about a lot of positive consequence if we succeed, and probably not much negative if we fail. You know, if someone gave me the goal, like a very simple goal, I just came up with, like, let's say they just were like, I need you to figure out what 2 + 2 is. It's like, okay, I think I can probably do that. Well, if I succeed, I don't think I should be promoted to VP. If I fail at that over a long period of time, really over a short period of time for that one, there's a question mark around my capability. If my job involves math at all. And so when you set, it's all part of the calibration, and this is where, you know, you're negotiating the expectations. If you go into it more in depth and you really start looking at this, you're also negotiating the consequences, positive, negative, and adaptive. You might have like learning checkpoints built into this. You might just say like, look, you know, here's, and you might actually establish your expectations along these lines. I've done something similar to this where it's like, look, here's the baseline. If we don't get all this basic stuff done, we need to consider that a failure. We need to look seriously at what went wrong. And there may be negative consequence for that. If we do at the baseline and we also got all this additional stuff done, that's pretty darn good. You did pretty well. And if you manage to hit this thing, which is what I want you to target, that's phenomenal, and I'm super excited, and we want to make sure we reward the team for doing something that we really didn't have a lot of confidence we were going to be able to do, but that we thought was important to aim for. So I think you calibrate your consequence as reward punishment or adaptive, right, against how hard the goals are. And this also helps when for teams that are just like, look, we're just going to constantly undershoot so we can always get it done. Well, something that starts happening, one, you want to look into like, what's the cultural pattern that caused that? Because often it's that accountability only meant punishment, never meant reward. And so if punishment is the only possibility, all I'm going to do is try to set as low a bar as possible so I'm not punished. There's no point in me striving for greatness because reward is not part of the system. And those sorts of places exist. And by the way, you know, I'll say this. I don't think I mentioned this in my GDC talk, but the person being held accountable, like I said, you have to be able to create consequence in order to hold someone accountable. They do have a way to create consequence for their manager, at least. And that is they can quit. And I guarantee there's a lot of individuals out there and managers out there who have experienced or seen the situation where somebody was really doing a good job and was not receiving what they considered to be just rewards, basically fair positive consequence for the great work that they were doing. And they held their manager accountable by quitting. And it's a brutal lesson. And by the way, I think I've also seen managers who are like, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. I can't, the inside of the bureaucracy of the system I'm in, I cannot give you more money. I cannot give you another raise. I can't, like, I wish I could. I'm fighting for it. I'm advocating for it. I'm at the limits of my ability to influence. I'm not sufficiently powerful in the organization to get you what you want. And I understand if you choose to depart. And that's, again, you holding the organization accountable for not treating you fairly. So anyway, there's like, it gets complicated, it gets nuanced. But yeah, I would say that if you have a team and they're always undershooting, what I would say is that they've probably been burned by the negative side of accountability and very rarely experienced the positive side. And so they do exactly what you would expect someone to do, which is attempt to avoid the negative entirely because it's all they know.
So I would like to get into the team aspect, individual accountability versus team accountability. And I'll set the stage a little bit, you know, why I think this is so interesting. You know, I instantly thought about this, you know, when I listened to you at GDC. Mm-hmm. And so there are some leadership or management practices that focus on the individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one classic example is I think it was Steve Jobs, you know, I think he called it single responsible person or something similar. But
single rainbow neck.
Yeah, I don't think that was the abbreviation they had, but in essence, that's kind of what it is. And let's say that you are doing that. I mean, we're seeing that quite a bit with how people set things up in favor in a backlog of features or other objectives, and it might be several people collaboratively working on a specific epic or story, but they're actually going to have one field that will be called, it's going to be, called owner or single responsible person or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's a practice that I think is quite widespread. And I think, a lot of people have kind of, followed the example of, I think Steve Jobs kind of, popularized it. On the same, same kind of tune, you have the expression that, shared responsibility is no responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I heard many times. So you have all of that on one side, which kind of makes the argument that you really need to make sure that there's a single individual, that's accountable and that the hierarchy goes from there. But on the other hand, you have, many, management practices that are, maybe are more recent. So if you look at several, agile methods, there's a much more focus on the team, that certain things are a responsibility for the team, instead of a specific person. This kind of debate between individual and team I think is pretty clear in that whole conversation. Is a product owner, a member of the team, or is that a person outside of the team? And then if it's a member of the team, is that, how much, authority should that person have? Is that person basically like a mini CEO of the team? So each of your squads or teams are basically like, little startups working together within the bigger organization,
mm-hmm.
which is, a pretty cool model if you make, can make it to work. Then you have arguments for other ways of running it.
Yeah.
Taking this model, there's a couple of things that that might seem, challenging, when you have more of a team approach to accountability, or maybe not. I would love to hear, your thoughts on this, individual versus team accountability.
So I think the core model of setting expectations, negotiating, committing, and holding, I think it still works with teams, and in fact, we see this a lot when. My brother's an engineering manager, and he was involved recently in a project where he had to like get a bunch of there were a bunch of things that they were asking for, and he was working on creating the reasonable amount of work and then figure out how to reduce scope so that it matched the amount of effort that they would be able to put into doing what they were going to do. And you could argue that what happened was the company said to the team that he was on, hey, we have a set of expectations. Here it is. And he said, okay, let me look at that. That's too much. Let me start negotiating with you about how much we can actually get done. And Once we reach a place where we feel like it's good, well, I'll commit to that. I'll have like the team will say like, yep, we're going to, okay, cool. We're on, we're going to try to get this done by that time. And if we fail, you know, you punish the team in some way. And if we succeed, you reward the team in some way. Now, I think the challenge with it comes in that idea of rewarding and punishing teams. We're very okay, functionally with individuals being punished or rewarded for their behavior. I think just, you know, hey, you did something illegal. You should be punished for that, right? You need to pay a fine or go to jail or whatever it is. Or you did something really great for society. We should reward you with that for somehow. And we don't know exactly how we might do that, but there's this idea of like, this makes a lot of sense. When it comes to teams, I think that's where it gets a little tricky. What does it mean to create consequence for a team? And what does it imply if you do? And this is also like, so if I hold the team accountable for failure and I say, hey, you, and now there's some sort of negative consequence, which again is like, what's everybody on the team get a pay cut? Well, that's not going to go over super well, right? That doesn't seem like a good idea, but what is it? Is it, there are other things that you might do. Hey, guess what? Stakeholders are going to be more in your business now. You lost some autonomy. We are going to spend a little bit more time trying to make sure that the things that you're working on actually make sense because you went off and built something that was not what we wanted. And we basically, like, trust is broken through that between the team and the business and must be rebuilt. And so consequence often looks like those sorts of things, like, oh, okay, we're looking at you with harsher eyes. Now, problem is, if you're looking at a team with harsher eyes, you see all the problems. And, you know, some of the teams out there that are very high performing, all you need to do is like look at them harshly and you'll find stuff to be concerned about in almost all cases. So you know, you engage things like human bias and stuff like this. And so I think that it is harder, but I think you also, just by running the model and saying like, let's set clear expectations for the team, let's negotiate, let's commit, and then let's hold. And again, start, I would say you lean more into the adaptive. Hey, your team failed at something. How are you learning? Talk to me about how this next project that we're taking on or the finishing this is going to go better. Talk to me about what you learned, what you're doing differently. And you're asking the leaders of that team that because they do represent that team. And, you know, I was once in an organization where they had milestones, and the milestones, it was this very weird thing. I got into this, it had been going on for years. The project had been going on for years, and I showed up and I was like looking around and I was looking at the milestones, all these different things. And I noticed that like people didn't seem to worry that much about the milestones, even though they weren't going to be met, or as far as I could tell. And I was new. And so they reached the milestone date, and it was an abject failure. Almost nothing of what we had listed as important to get done by the milestone had been done. And I discovered that what usually happens on this team is that the leaders jump forward and say, it's all our fault. Sorry, team, we failed you. It's obviously the leaders that are to blame. We need to clean up our stuff on the leadership side. You're all great and awesome. And you know, keep doing all the awesome work that you're doing, and we're going to go try to solve this for the next one. I discovered that this had happened like some number of times previously, that every time leadership basically ran in and jumped on their sword. And what seemed to have occurred from that over a long enough period of time was that the team disengaged from the milestones and just did what they thought was the right work to do. Now, it may make sense for them to go and do the work that they thought they should do, but they weren't contributing in any way or talking about or saying like, hey, those milestones aren't the right things. Like, that milestone does not contain the right work. They weren't objecting. They weren't bought in, but they weren't really engaging with it at all. And so I did something, and no one liked me after this, but some people were like, that was actually probably necessary. I called out the whole team. I said, hey, we missed this milestone. And yeah, we as leaders are absolutely responsible for that. Even me as a new guy, right? I was like, I'm responsible for this too. I need to figure out what's going on. And I need to change it. But you're all responsible too. This wasn't just leaders' fault. You all didn't care about this. You did not care about this milestone. And that was obvious through the work you chose to do. I didn't see anybody in the 3 weeks running up the milestone going like, hey, did we get everything done that we needed to so that we can hit our milestone? These milestones matter. They're important for the company. They're important for the project. They're important for us shipping something successful. And I want you to engage. And again, a lot of people were annoyed at me, but when we were coming up on the next milestone, you better believe people were asking more questions because I'd made it their problem. Now again, you know, there's someone out there who would say like, Ben, you did the wrong thing, or you did the right thing or whatever. All I know is that they went from a place where they didn't care about the milestones. They just viewed it as some leadership thing that didn't matter to like, you have the wrong milestones. You guys need to do a better job. And I'm like, great. How do we need to do a better job? What's wrong with the milestones? Like, talk to us about what would be reasonable. And suddenly we're now having the right conversation because, I to some extent punished through the word that came to mind is shaming, but I'm not big on shaming people, but through just calling out that like we had collectively failed. It wasn't just some abstracted group of leaders. It was everybody. We had all failed to meet this milestone. And that was a problem. That was a problem for us as an organization. If we consistently failed our milestones, we would not be trusted. And that was exactly what had been happening. So anyway, so I went through this and just the consequence was me calling them out and me saying like, you're responsible for this too. Or I'm basically saying, I'm going to hold you accountable for this. Even if it's just through calling you out publicly. Because that's a consequence. What set expectations, what negotiate, what commit, what hold look like change when it's a team. And you have to adapt it to that. And I think you also still want to have an individual version running for the individuals on the team as well. But you know, the same model I think still functions and applies.
Okay. So it was very interesting, you know, what you said there. So, you know, you say, you know, you need both. So let's say that you are, you're leaning quite a bit into, you know, team and model in a lot of the things you do. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that you basically apply this model of accountability to the team, you know, where useful, but you combine it with an individual approach as well? So it's just basically a bit of a hybrid, so to say.
So there are models, organizational models, where you run what are called self-directed teams. And in a purely self-directed model, they are setting the goal. They are doing all their own internal management. You hold the team accountable for their outcomes. And one of the big levers that you have is like, look, if you're continually failing, I will shut the team down. I'll turn off your funding. And I actually expect you to hire people. I expect you to fire people. I expect you to performance manage people. Inside your team, you will do all of this. I am going to look to your team to be the thing that is successful. Excuse me. I said self-directing. I apologize. Self-managing. This is an example of a self-managing team. A self-directed team is a team that's actually choosing its own goal. A self-managing team is one where internally they do all their hiring, their firing, their performance management. They handle all that. And what that means is that the organization just looks to the team and says, look, here's the goals I'm giving you. Here's what I'm expecting of you, right? We run the four steps of healthy accountability with the team. And there will be consequences to your team if you can't figure out how to achieve these goals. Or again, be in communication with us in an ongoing process so that we're understanding how things are going and how they're not. And so it all make, you know, again, if someone fails all their expectations, but it makes a lot of sense that they failed and they've been talking to you about how things have been harder than they expected and they're still making good progress and you're happy with that and their explanations mesh with reality and all these different things, like, then it's like, well, you might have failed, but that might have been there may have been no way for you to succeed. And it's okay that you failed in this instance. We have to adjust our expectations and our consequences because of that. So you have organizational structures that run like that. They're uncommon. I don't see a lot of organizations run self-managing teams. And because of that, what you tend to have is individuals on teams that also have some other structure, whether they're part of a discipline or something else. Like their manager may not be the person who leads the team. And in those environments now, you should always be creating some style of individual expectation for people so that they know what they're targeting. And by the way, even if your expectation is just your job is to make this team succeed, I don't care how you do it, make this team succeed. You know, okay, well, that's an expectation that you have. Cool. What is it? Now if I'm that person, I'm like, well, what does it mean for the team to succeed? Okay, well, this is what it means for the team to succeed. Okay, cool. So you're holding me accountable for making sure this team succeeds. I'm going to be talking to you and we're going to stay in touch about how that's going. and you know, the help I might need from you and all these different things. And at the end of some time period, we're going to evaluate whether we think the team succeeded or not. And I will be held accountable for that. Team leaders often end up in that situation where their evaluation of their success is looked at through the lens of like, how is their team doing? Same thing with like discipline managers and all the, you know, or discipline leaders and things like that. I think you want both. In all cases though, like it's a lot of the model is really about that first step of like, can we get the expectations out into the public sphere? Can we get the expectations? If I have an expectation of a team, does that team know it? If they don't, then my expectation is irrelevant because they're going to go try to do stuff and it may have nothing to do with what I'm expecting. You can apply that to a team. You can apply that to an individual. You can apply that to a business unit. You can apply that to anything. And the call out there is really for in all these environments, whether it's a studio, a team, an individual, are you actually telling people what your expectations are? Are you telling that group? And again, this is where, like, the reason we don't have much healthy accountability is because so often this isn't done. This first step, the setting expectations that to, again, a group, an individual, whatever, no one ever said. We just assumed. We assumed based on, well, you know, you're smart. We only hire smart people here. You should have been able to figure it out. And it's like, okay, well, maybe some did, maybe some didn't. But you never actually were clear with what you wanted. And so it does feel unfair if I'm the individual of the team that is suddenly told like, you didn't meet expectations. It's like, wait, what was the expectation? Well, it was why. I didn't know that was the expectation. Well, that's your problem. Oh, yeah, kind of it is my problem because you get to hold me accountable for not doing it. But that doesn't seem reasonable to me.
So it sounds to me that one, because, you know, when you're doing, you know, a bit of both, you know, both team and individual. I'm going to take a step back. So I totally agree with you that it's quite unusual to see self-managing teams. You know, there's a lot of talk about self-managing teams in the Agile community, but how common are they in reality?
Yeah.
And I think if I looked the last, you know, 20 years and all the teams, you know, I had a chance to observe, I think one of the key things are that it's not a stable state, because you have, you know, a team that is able to efficiently self-manage. They need to, well, first they need to be, it needs to be a team that is, you know, gelled, and you can apply, you know, any group dynamic model to that, if you prefer, you know, the FIRE model or the, you know, form, storming, norming, performing model, but whatever, you know, they, just because you put together a group of talented people, they're not instantly going to be able to do that. You know, you need to have Correct. That group gelled first. And you know, this is kind of where we get into the sports metaphor again, that, you know, very, you know, a sports team that, you know, that are able to play very well together. I mean, that is one of those, you know, very well-gelled teams. So there, you know, my way to identify, you know, if this is a very well-gelled team is that the team doesn't really need to have a conversation around who needs to like take step forward and take leadership on a specific question, because the team intuitively knows who to look at. Yeah. But getting to that point is not an easy thing. It doesn't happen overnight. And again, if we go back to kind of, you know, models of group dynamics, you're going to rock that group dynamic every time you add or deduct a person to the team, or you change the task for the team or any other part of the environment, which means that, you know, you're going to change this a lot. So your chance of this being very stable, it's not high. You know, you're going to have times when you have these teams, but they're going to be unstable and disappear. So if you're thinking about this, you know, like, you know, how am I going to run my whole, you know, freaking organization? You can't rely upon self-managing teams. You need some other model. And if you simply get accountability right, you're going to be doing better than 99% of all other, you know, organizations and teams.
Correct.
So,
by the way, the only thing I'll say that to add to that, and if you start, because most people start with accountability and the hold, the consequence, and again, purely through a negative lens most of the time. If you start with the expectations in all these cases, whether it's team, whether it's individual, you're going to go farther than the people that are stuck asking the question, why is no one taking accountability? I can tell you why no one's taking accountability. It's because they're terrified too. Because to take accountability is to make yourself vulnerable to punishment. And many of these bureaucratic organizations that aren't as functional, there's very little upside. So starting from the lens of like, what would it mean for me as a senior leader of this organization to create an environment where expectations were known to the people that had those expectations of them? Like, how would I do that? How would I cascade that through my org? Start there. And then work to accountability instead of starting with consequence and trying to kind of reverse engineer, because you're going to create a lot of toxicity.
Yeah. I had to add one thing to what we're talking about now, which is, you know, you and I have had conversations before about, how or some organizations have messed up their agile implementations and basically knew how to get it right. Mm-hmm. And I think, one of the specific things that very often goes wrong, and I think a lot of agile coaches is to blame for this, is that when thinking about, let's say, organizational model, self-managing is expected. So it's just like, okay, we put together this team and now they're self-managing. And you totally forget about that there's the whole group dynamic element, to this. And there are methods to actually build that. Build the team into a very well-yelled team that can actually self-manage. But very often, at least what I've seen, that is neglected. Most often because people just don't understand group dynamics enough to kind of take that into account of mm-hmm. the whole model. But with that said, finally, I kind of wanted to, there was taking what you've been saying now on team versus individual. In my mind, it leads into a model, because when you do a bit of both, of course, the risk you're running is that things will be unclear, and you want to create clarity in your organization around what's going on, and. What I'm getting to, and I want to bounce this with you and, see what you think about this, is if you apply a very individual approach to accountability with responsibilities within the role, and you combine that with more of a group approach to accountability when it comes to the objective, that sounds to me like a pretty nice distinction. What do you think about that?
Say that again for me.
So we already talked about this, that, okay, we apply everything we've been saying, you apply this model to mm-hmm. how we work with accountability with the individual mm-hmm. In the role description. So, going back to what we said before, okay, this is your role and these are your responsibilities and you apply this to this, and then you come back to this quarterly or every 6 months or so. And I think you took the example that if you're a leader, your ability, with a team is going to be part of that responsibility.
Yes.
So basically applying this in a very, applying this in an individual way in how we think about accountability as part of your role. Mm-hmm. Your role in the team, your role in the organization, your role as a manager, mm-hmm. your role as a specialist. But then when we are thinking about this, it's like, okay, here we have this big feature that the team will develop, or this marketing initiative, if it's a marketing team, or, whatever, increment of work, whatever objective that you're setting for the team, there you apply this more from a group point of view, because, well, yes. For many reasons, but at least one of them, you want everyone in the team to be, committed and on, you want everyone in the boat.
Yes. Yes. That resonates with me. And I would go even a step farther and say, beyond just the leader, it's, I think people, if I were to say, well, one of a leader's core expectations should be related to or just directly the success of the team, right? You're a leader of this team. So I'm expecting the team to be successful and I'm going to kind of hold you accountable for that. I would go further and say that everybody on the team should have sort of a zeroth level priority, which is my job is to help this team succeed. And that expectation is being clearly set. You know, you go to tell the engineer, look, I don't care if you don't write any code. If you do what needs to be done to help this team succeed, and you're communicating that to me, you know, so it's like, okay, cool, I'm not writing any code. I'm just going to go start studying project management because that's what I think the team needs. Well, okay, maybe we already have a project manager and they should do that. Like, you know, within reason. But this idea of my primary expectation of you is that you're helping this team succeed. Whatever its goals are, you're there. A key part of your job is helping it succeed. So whether you write all kinds of really cool code or no code, you know, I've seen people actually who got distracted and were doing a ton of valuable work, but it wasn't valuable work that was helping their team succeed. And that's a problem. Right. You're okay, cool. You're clearly investing a lot of time and you clearly value valuable things, but you're not actually supporting your team the way we would expect. And so I think that like having that zero level priority actually connects these things, which is you have different sort of organizational designs you can create. You can be discipline centric, you can be product centric, you can be, design centric, tech centric, whatever. There's a lot of different things that you can kind of put at the center. The one I like though is to kind of you say basically like the point is to serve our audience well, so you might say it's a product lens, and all the teams need to contribute to that idea of how we're serving the audience well, whether it's indirectly through serving other teams that are serving the audience or whether it's directly through developing something for that audience, and all the individuals have a primary responsibility to support their teams in the serving of that audience. And again, you can pick your top, like maybe it's, you know, maybe you're tech driven or whatever else, like I've lots of different ways you can build organizations, but this is why I like cross-functionality on teams. And this is why, because I think if you do cross-functional teams oriented towards creating value for your audience, I think you get the cleanest connection between what it means for the company to be successful and what it means for an individual to be successful. There's like a clear set, like laddering set of steps up the org of like, oh, got it. My job is to make sure my team is successful because my team is trying to build this thing that the player or audience member is going to love. And if they succeed at that, then this release that we do is going to go really well with all these other teams. And if we do that, then the product is going to be successful. And if the product is successful, then the company is going to be successful because the audience is going to reward us with their time, attention, money, whatever it is you're looking for. And I think that's why, you know, it's a sort of a different way of looking at like, why is cross-functionality so helpful to organizations that manage to do it well?
Yeah, that's a very good point and a very strong argument for cross-functionality, you know, which is a very large, topic in itself, that I hope we get a chance to get into. I do think this conversation is very important. Most companies are not amazing at this, and mm-hmm. you know, going back to how, you know, where we started, the difference in, you know, in you know, in throughput of high quality work is, and to do so in an environment that is not toxic but very motivating and rewarding for everyone.
Yeah.
The delta between doing this well and doing this, you know, not so well, it's just massive, you know?
Yes.
I hope you liked that interview. If you did, you know what to do. Share it on your favorite social media so others can learn from the Favro community.